Art is so, so very universal, and I believe a lot of us have been connected through it in one way or another, be it in visual art or performing art. And during this year, at Nfasi Art Space, Tuku Tenida, I had a chance to meet a lot of creatives, and I had a chance to meet a German visual artist, Teresa, whose art is related to our African art in a way. She's more into portraits, but you can see that the universal language is there. Finding yourself in the middle of the visual art, you know, in a way that you could or could not explain. Today on this episode, Visualizing Art, we have Teresa all the way from Germany with us. And this is Chai Combo, the podcast. Stay there.
Yo, what's up? This is Fivara, Fivara. You're listening to Chai Convo with Lizana.
Welcome, Teresa, to our podcast, Chai Convo. And as you introduce yourself, please also share your artistic journey, especially in what you do, visual art.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Lizana. It's so good to speak to you again. And I'm so happy that we were able to realize this project of having a small podcast interview. So hello, everybody out there, whoever is listening. My name is Teresa. I'm 23 years old. I'm coming from Germany. And I am a visual artist. So I specialize in photorealistic portrait drawings, but I also try out any other medium within the visual arts realm. I've done oil painting, acrylic painting, watercolor, gouache, I don't know, collage, whatever's out there really. I really try to be more experimental with it. And besides, I'm also a university student, so I'm studying here in my hometown in Germany. I used to study history of arts and cultural anthropology in my bachelor degree. I have now started my master's focusing on history of arts and with a focus in curatorial studies. So I'm trying to become a curator with that, but I still have my passion for the arts, of course. And to me, it's just important to really work within the arts and creative scene. I feel like that's where I belong. So yeah, maybe that gives you a good impression to begin with.
Coming from an artistic environment, artistic background, as a visual artist, and you have been around that for quite a bit. I want to know, what do you think of our current state of arts and culture in Tanzania? In your personal views.
Okay, so we're starting right out with a little bit more of a deeper and intense question, I would say. Now, I will say first up, I do find it a little bit difficult to sort of like judge the Tanzanian arts and culture situation as an outsider, so to speak. And by outsider, I definitely do not mean that during my time there, people were like bullying me or they didn't want me to be a part of their community. It's actually quite the opposite. My Tanzanian people are so friendly and open and hostile. So please don't get me wrong on that. But what I'm just trying to say is that I do not have the experience of being born and growing up in Tanzania. So I will never, even if I would like spend 10 years there, I will never be able to understand the culture fully. That is really just, you know, it's just gonna be for people who have been born and raised there. So I think the only people who can really know what is missing and what needs to be done are you guys, of course, right? But from what I have seen and during Tukatana Arts Week, like, you know, I had the chance to talk to so many different artists coming from different realms also, you know, not just the visual artists, but you had the musicians, you had the photographer. Okay, photography is visual arts, but I'm just saying, like, not just the painters and the drawing kind of people like me, right? The models, all of these people, I had a good chance to talk to them. And they were all telling me, especially for the visual arts, which I'm going to focus on because this is just where I have the most expertise, they were all telling me that they feel like they're not really the institutions or the mechanisms or the culture of selling and collecting art. So this entire arts market is kind of missing. And also culturally, I think the value of visual art is not necessarily understood. And that's not just like entirely my idea. Like I said, again, I don't like this idea of like as an outsider coming and then, you know, just have an overall look at it and then feeling able to judge something. I'm kind of quoting here the things that I have been told by actual Tanzanian artists. And I think that is very important that you guys get to pinpoint the issues actually. But yeah, so what I just see is that these mechanisms are kind of missing. And what I would personally wish for a country like Tanzania, where these mechanisms to make it easier for artists to sell their artwork and to earn good money and to earn a deserving salary. I know how much work goes into every single piece of art. So I'm wishing that you guys will find a way, we'll find institutions, build your own institutions, find your own culture and exhibition style, and your own way of showing the value of artwork to the people, that can make your very own artists benefit. What I don't like is this idea of copying and pasting, right? Of course, we can say like, yeah, the arts market in most of the Western countries is super established, so I guess they're doing something right. We're just going to copy and paste that. That is not going to work because we have a completely different day-to-day culture, so to speak. So in Germany, for example, it's a normal activity, not throughout all the realms of our society. I will say that mostly people who are coming from like academic families or whatever, they have a culture of sometimes just going to the museum or to the arts exhibition on the weekend. So we have this is a free time activity for us, right? I think if you ask any Tanzanian on the street, like, when was the last time that you visited an arts exhibition, chances are that is just not the case at all. And I also see that a lot of visual artwork is just being created to cater, like, the tourist market, right? And there's nothing wrong with it. I just feel like if you're trying to cater somebody, and if you're trying to make somebody like what you're doing or you know, meet their expectations, because what tourists want is this type of culture arts, right? The paintings that I see the most are of like the jumping Maasais or of the safari animals, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm just sometimes asking myself, is this really what the Tanzanian artists want to paint? Is this, are those really the ideas that they want to bring to life? And I think oftentimes the answer is no. And I've gotten this feedback pretty directly, right? This is not always, there are so many more ideas that want to be showcased. But if you have the pressure of making money and just somehow selling it, then it becomes really, really difficult to stay authentic as an artist. And I think it's so important to stay authentic as an artist. So I would wish for you guys to establish your own structures, your own institutions, and your own culture of exhibiting and selling art and having arts collectors, people who really value the original and authentic artists' ideas, so that your artists could make a good living and could be able to showcase their authentic selves and through their arts. And I really like this to me, the value of art is really well described by this quote of Carl Jung, who's like a psychoanalyst, who said that like the conscious mind is working in sentences and in language, but the subconscious mind is working in images and pictures. And I think we all have this experience, and like during daytime when we're focused, we really do think in sentences, but when we dream, most of the time we only remember the pictures, right? And so I think same goes when you go to an exhibition and you really feel drawn to a certain artwork. You don't have to understand anything about arts. You don't have to be an expert to understand arts. In fact, sometimes it's better to know nothing about it at all and not think about, oh, what was like the artist's intention behind it, but really just try to feel, what do I feel more drawn to in this exhibition? And it can tell you so much about yourself and about your subconscious and all of these super exciting things, right? So this type of connection, to me, is the value of arts. And, you know, as an arts culture, while developing a Tanzanian art scene, you might also feel like something else is the biggest quality of arts in Tanzanian culture. That's fine. I would just really like moving forward to see that the Tanzanian artists are able to establish a really good artistic structure and culture that fits their needs, that fits their day-to-day culture, that fits their community's needs and culture. And then I would like to really see it go further, right? I would like to see them participating in the global arts market and not just as like, oh, like, you know, some Western people are going to fund an arts project here and there to have something African showcase because we never see that. Like, nothing against that. I'm happy that these funded projects exist. I think they're a good starting point. But with every funded project, there come expectations from the person who's funding. And so I think if you just have a local artistic structure that is working for you guys, where you are really independent, then you have a higher chance of your artist being really authentic and creating masterpieces, really, that can touch masses. And I mean that. The artistic potential is definitely there. I have talked to so many people. I was allowed to look into so many art studios. The creativity, the talent, even the craftsmanship is definitely there. And I would just love to see it being represented more and being more authentic. And then what we have now, once it has been established globally, the next step would be that if you have your independent arts scene and culture scene, you could also way more independently kind of penetrate the global market, and you would also have the possibility of shaping the global market, because you do not depend on any other force in this arts market, in this global arts market anymore. You're independent, right? So it would be more of like an equal exchange with all of the other arts forces within the international market, and that way you could have like a fair exchange with other nations, right? And you would also really get to, yeah, shape part of the international arts scene. This is what I would really like to see. I think this would make it so much more interesting, as opposed to only having the Western countries a kind of ruling over this so-called global arts market. And this is not to put these nations down. It's still impressive to look into the history of institutionalized arts history in Western countries. There's nothing wrong with that. I just think if you call it a global arts market, everyone should be able to participate and also to shape it. Of course, it's going to make it a bit more chaotic, and people don't like to to split up power. But especially in the creative realm, we should be open to new ideas and new constructions. So this is what I would love to see going forward.
Teresa, guide us through your art. What does it mean to you? And what is the contribution of what you do to your community?
Mm-hmm. So we are going a bit more personal. But yeah, of course. So art to me, and I briefly touched this in the previous question. Yeah, I really, really like this idea. And I didn't learn it too long ago, but I really like this idea that our subconscious is working in images. And so by being able to create images, some of the images that I create, especially the more surreal stuff, right? The stuff that you would look at and you would automatically kind of sense that it has a deeper meaning. Even though I say that my photorealistic portraits, they definitely have meaning. So when I draw the portraits, to me, it is about making people feel seen. You can take a picture of somebody with your phone or whatever, right? And it's just a quick snap. And this is not to downplay photography. No, arts photography, fine arts photography is on a whole new level. Please interview your local photographers. They know what they're talking about. This is not to downplay any of this. This is a whole different section of arts, and it has my utmost respect. But, you know, I'm just talking about the casual pictures that you're taking. You could take just any selfie, right? And you could say like, yeah, but then your drawing looks similar to that. But what the point is, to me, I spend, depending on the size of the drawing of the portrait, between 5 and 50 or more hours in order to complete a piece and make it look right. And I'm very, very interested in being able to capture the essence of somebody, right? And I spend so much time making sure that every pencil stroke sits right so that the person will be able to recognize him or herself. And this is, making people feel seen. This is very important to me. And I think if I could, I would love to draw every single face on the planet. I'm not even exaggerating, because I'm just so fascinated by our differences and by the way people have like an aura about them. You know, you look at them and you just feel certain things. And yeah, so I want my portraits to look real. I want them to look lively. I want people to recognize themselves in it. So this is really the magic about this segment. But then there's also like the pictures that I draw or paint, where you can already sense, oh, it has even deeper meaning than that, right? They're a little bit surreal. They're a little bit like, you could check out my Instagram, for example. There's one black and white drawing that I did of like a couple. They're standing back to back and their bodies, like their torsos, are golden cages. And within these cages, there are like smaller figures of themselves and they're standing towards each other. So like things like that, that have deeper meaning, obviously. I'm not going to talk about this specific meaning. If you want to know, you should check it out and see for yourself what it means to you. But yeah, this to me is the meaning of art, you know, and it's not always about the intention of the artist. Now, in history of arts, you learn how to analyze pictures and how to understand them in their time context and what the artist wanted. You learn how you can restructure that, reconstruct that, and that is super interesting. But to me, that's not necessarily always the case, unless you want to be scientific about it. But art is so intuitive. Right? That's the beauty of arts. That is the beauty of arts, that you get to be intuitive and that the viewers can be touched intuitively. So oftentimes we don't even know consciously what is drawing us to a certain piece of art, but we just feel that connection. And it might be that we have the same intuition that was the artist's intention, or it might be that we see something completely different in the piece of art, because we have our own experiences and we have our own stories that we make up in our minds, right? And this to me is the key aspect. This to me is the absolute key aspect on why visual arts is so important to us. So yeah, that's what it would be like to me. And then also, of course, for me personally, I just enjoy making arts. Now, of course, it requires a lot of focus, but just even when I can let loose a little bit and I'm just filling out some pages on my sketchbook, to me, it's almost a form of self-care. I get to relax. I'm in my element and I'm also in this so-called flow state. Like so many times, creating art is this one activity where it's like when you're talking to a really, really good friend and suddenly you look at your watch and you realize like, what? Like 2 or 3 hours have passed. For me, when I sit down and draw or paint, even 5 to 6 hours can pass and I didn't even notice that I actually have to go pee or eat something or I'm thirsty, you know. This can really happen because you're so much in this flow state where you're super focused but enjoying it and feeling energized at the same time and you do not feel drained. So that's definitely what it means to me. It's just bringing me joy and I love to connect to other people in that way.
Did you always see yourself growing in this path of art, like you would be a visual artist?
Short answer, definitely yes. And I would say that I have always been a creative person. I think like you are born creative, and I think most artists can relate to that. Like for us, we started very young showcasing this kind of interest, and I think I started picking up a pencil for the first time when I was 3. I have this age in my head because around age 3 here in Germany we go to kindergarten, and it's actually part of the program to have drawing supplies and markers and whatnot, and you know, try to create something. Of course it's not serious, it's very playful, but I never was able to drop it, you know. I was fortunate enough to have drawing supplies or like little painting supplies from my parents at home, and I was able to experiment even outside of kindergarten or later on school times, and I just stuck with it because I really, really enjoyed it. And now a lot of people are just saying like, wow, you're so talented when I see your pieces. I was born creative and curious for this craft, but it was not born being able to draw photorealistic portraits. And I always like to say that drawing or painting is a skill that can definitely be learned, but you need to have the patience and enjoy it. If you don't, and this goes for any skill in life, I guess, if you do not enjoy doing it, you're not going to stick with it. You're not going to put that many hours into it. And so, yeah, I definitely think I was born for it in a way. I was born to create art in a way, just because it comes so naturally. Whatever comes naturally to you, that is your skill, that is your path that you should follow. So I would definitely say, like, yes, I kind of feel like I was meant to take this path, and I don't regret anything, and I'm very happy with all of the experiences that I had during just creating art, and also more and more sharing it with other people, getting feedback, sharing ideas with artistic friends, finding more artistic friends on the way, because I did not always have those, especially in school. It's only been for the past few years where I have one friend since school. So shout out to Paulina if you listen to this. It's like the number one artsy artistic friend that I kind of always had, like not always, but like 8 years back or even longer. We met in middle school. But after that, I didn't really meet many other artists. And so most of my artist friends, they are from Tanzania. And that's why I appreciate the country so much, and I appreciate the community, because for me, yeah, it's just this positive experience of having a real arts community there, which here I have my one friend, but I don't have a real arts community, right? So, yeah.
Teresa, well, me and you, we had our moments of a lot of conversations, a lot of, you know, laughters and everything, but I am still wondering, do you consider yourself an extrovert or an introvert?
Yeah, so I would definitely identify as an extrovert. I was really kind of shy while I was going to school, because I was actually bullied quite hard for a long time. Yeah, people thought that I was weird. Now, first of all, I was growing tall really fast, so I was like the tallest child in the class, even taller than all of the boys, and I think that you feel me as a fellow tall woman. It is not easy. People can make fun of you, and it's so stupid, because it's like just body shaming. You know, it's the same as people are making fun of like small or short men. Like, what's the point of this? We're not choosing how tall or not so tall we're growing, right? So it's pretty much ridiculous. So yeah, that was definitely a time where I had like no friends at all, being more kind of introverted. But I think these experiences, it was painful at the time, I'm not gonna lie. I think everybody who made experiences like this knows that. But it was not necessarily bad. Like, when you are able to spend time with yourself, I think that's a really, really good quality, to be able to like yourself and spend time with yourself. And through that, I learned how to like other people and how to talk to other people. And yeah, in a more easygoing manner. And so I would definitely identify as an extrovert, especially as for right now, even though I do have my times where I like to just have my evenings alone and my little creative sessions, you know, being home alone, drawing or painting for 5 to 6 hours, like I previously mentioned. But then I definitely do like to go out and socialize and talk and laugh and dance. You know, I like dancing. So yeah, definitely extrovert.
Apart from penciling, drawing, sketching, what other talents or skills do you have?
Yeah, I mean, talking about other talents, I don't know, I feel a bit humble, to be honest. I don't really think that I have major other talents, or like maybe skills. You would perhaps think of other things that I'm doing. So, you know, when I was a child, for like 9 to 10 years, I think I was horseback riding. That is a proper sports in Germany. We don't just do it as a matter of transportation. Here's like a really fancy sports, and you could even have like competitions, and then you do like show jumping. So you're literally jumping with a horse over obstacles and stuff like that. It was a fun time. I was not like super successful, right? But I would say I was good as having this connection with the horse that I was riding at the time. So like, yeah, I think you do have to be a bit sensitive in order to work well with your animal of any kind, right? So I would say I was good at that, but not necessarily technically good at at the show jumping or anything. I was doing kickboxing for a while, then I don't know, I do gym just like what other people do. Is that really like, that's not a talent, that is not a skill. But what I would say, what I'm really also good at is anything in the social realm. So I think it kind of fits the topic of me drawing portraits and wanting people to be seen. And I've gotten this feedback even before that I make people feel seen. And I think that's actually quite beautiful. I would say, or I would guess that I'm the type of person who's not really judging people quickly. I like to give almost anybody a chance, really. Like, you have to mess up real hard with me for you to not give you a chance, because we're all human. We all make mistakes. And when I meet you for the first time, I can know nothing about you. So many people will surprise you if you just give them a chance, right? Of course, you cannot talk to every single person on the planet, but yeah, I like to see the good in people. And also, I've been getting feedback on, like, a lot of people come with their issues or, like, problems to me. They really trust me with it. And I like to be the person that is trusted, right? And not, like, in a way of, like, oh, everybody's coming to tell me their deepest secrets and juicy stories or whatever. So not in a gossip type of manner. I think that's actually part of the reason why people like to trust me with things, is that I am able to shut my mouth. It's not like a talent, maybe, but I am definitely able to keep something to myself if it's really confident and was given to me in a very personal matter. And I even had those experiences where I was literally sitting in the bus and somebody would sit next to me, like a complete stranger, and you just start talking, you know, as people do. And then they would also start telling me their life stories or asking for advice. So yeah, I don't know. I think there seems to be a side of me that's really empathic. Do you say I'm being an empath? English is also not my first language, so please bear with me. But yeah, I think it's called being empathetic, or being like an empath. So really understanding people really well, being able to walk in their shoes. And I would say that's something that I am quite good at, and that I also like. I like connecting with people, and yeah, maybe that's some other things about me.
Now, the mental space, mental health, wellness. From where you're coming, from where you're sitting, standing, or living, Teresa, I would like to know, do people open up to their emotions? Meaning, do you talk about your emotions openly? And do you have a person that you trust, that you can run to, that you can talk to, that you trust with your emotions and vulnerabilities? And in case of that tight air, how do you handle that? Self-care methods, please share with us.
Mental health is such an important topic that has coming more and more to attention, and I really, really love this progress. It is so important, because I think especially our culture here is a little bit pressuring at times, you know, like, especially Germans, we are so much on point. It's like one of the major differences, right, that I really had to get used to. That, yeah, Tanzanians are not super strict about time, but Germans really are. Like, even among the Europeans, there's jokes about it, that we're super strict with time, and like this mentality of like time is money. And while this might be true to a certain degree, and grinding culture can be positive, it can definitely have an impact on your life, it can bring you benefits. I'm not trying to downplay that, but you really, really have to balance it out with your mental health, right? And so I say, like, no, people are not talking about their emotions, enough about their emotions, right? And I think part of it is because most of us are scared of negative emotions, and maybe some of us don't even know sometimes where they are coming from within us, and we don't know how to express those. Because even think, like, when a child is happy and it's laughing, everybody will try to push the child even further to laugh more, right? But when the baby is crying and it's getting on our nerves, we're trying to shut it down. And I understand why that is, because it's hard having a child. Now, I don't have children yet, but I could imagine, right? But yeah, of course, that way we are learning, like, okay, we're not allowed to have certain emotions, which is kind of wrong. Like, if we are not able to address, especially our negative emotions sometimes, it becomes an issue because it's all piling up. And so I think, like, no, definitely, we're not talking about enough about our emotions. And I understand that that is hard, and that we can feel at times like it's not relevant, or we don't want to go onto other people's nerves or whatever. And that's definitely something that I'm guilty of. Like I said, a lot of people like to come towards me for some advice, or just to have somebody to listen to, and I like giving that. But I'm always not afraid, but just feel a bit shy to share my true emotions at times, right? It can be hard to be so vulnerable. So I do like to protect myself in a certain way. And I think, yeah, like, not talking about your emotions, it is a means of protection, and that's fair enough. But with your closest people, you should really be able to let loose a little bit, right? And let your guard down. And so, yeah, no, I'm probably also not the best at talking about my emotions, but with my closest persons, I've definitely established a culture of good and healthy communication, I would say, for sure. Yeah. So my closest person, like, number one person, of course, would be my partner. I think it's really, really important. If you are living in a partnership, this person, yeah, you should be able to talk about anything with them, right? So for me, number one person to call would definitely be my partner, who, fun fact, is a Tanzanian. yeah, but then it's also my mom. I would definitely say that my mom, my dad. I also have a really good connection with my brother. I only have one sibling, and we're not that many years apart, so he's like a little bit older, only 1 year. Now he's studying law, so he's quite busy, but when we do get to talk, I can also definitely call him when something is going on. I'm really, really close with my grandma from my mother's side as well. And then, of course, I definitely have a girl squad. So these are the girls that I'm friends with since school for the longest of time. And they are really, really just a handful of people, if even. But these are definitely the ladies that I can call when things goes down. And then now, all of these people, they're my absolutely closest circle. And it depends on the kind of issue that I'm having, who I'm going to call or talk to. But I can definitely talk to them. And I think this is so precious. And it doesn't matter, like, even if you maybe don't have, unfortunately, a family to talk to, you feel like you don't have friends, just letting it out is super important. Even if you, I also like this idea or culture of writing a letter to yourself. If you literally have nobody at the moment, or just in general, right? Life is just like that sometimes. If you can write a letter to yourself, if there's something that I'm not quite ready yet to talk about, I would also do that. And it's certainly helping. So 100% recommend to try this out, just to let it out. You know, you don't have to keep it. You can burn it or throw it away or whatever afterwards, but just try to let it out. Or just, you know, if you're a believer, like me, I like to pray every single night, just telling it God. If you don't have a person, you know, faith can be so helpful, and I don't care what you believe in, that's not the point, but if you just believe, it can be such a relief to just tell somebody, even if it's not a person. So yeah, these are the ways that I like to air out my emotions if I do need to have somebody to talk to. Type of person, like I said, I really, really like caring about other people's problems, and I always also feel super involved. It's actually something that is not only positive, something that I feel like I need to work on, because sometimes I feel so involved with other people's troubles that I forget about myself, or that I cannot see my own limits. You know, when you take on so much stress from other people and trying to cheer somebody up, but you're not getting the same amount back, then you literally cannot get from an empty cup. So for me, oftentimes, to be honest, I do not notice when I'm drained, and I will only notice when I start having physical pain. So unfortunately, I'm suffering from like migraines. It's running in my family, you know. It's not like the worst thing ever, but it's definitely, you can do nothing when you have a real migraine. I also get like, my vision gets unclear and the head just hurts all over, so I can start to get really dizzy. And this is how I know, for me it's a clear stress symptom, so this is how I know things are definitely getting too much and I'm drained. But I really, really have to work on myself to understand that this is crossing my limitations right now before I get the physical pain. But yeah, right now we're still in that state. But when now, in a very acute situation, I would just have to lie down and try to sleep, right? And try and rest, just rest, do literally nothing. But then sometimes I feel like we know, or at least I know, that something is not quite right. For some reason, I'm not happy, even though maybe I seem to have everything that I need or things are just going forward. And then it can be hard to figure out what the actual issue is. If you don't know what the issue is, the underlying issue is, then you cannot fix it, right? So yeah, when things do get so much, I like to try and meditate. Meditation is a really, really great tool for me, or literally just trying to write. Writing whatever crosses my mind, and then I just put it away and maybe I reread it the next day and I try to figure out what the actual issues are, like what's on my mind. The same with meditation, you basically just sit and kind of watch your own thoughts pass, right? And by watching yourself thinking, it's a really interesting exercise. I highly recommend it to anybody listening who never tried this before. You can learn so much about yourself by just watching yourself and observing yourself in that way. And so I really try to get to the root, to reflect, to know what the underlying issue is, and then really try to fix the problem by the roots. So yeah, when it comes to self-care routines, definitely praying or meditation, just spending time with myself, really, really being able to be alone then, to find my inner voice again. Because I do have this belief that, I read this quote somewhere, unfortunately I do not know who said that. If anybody knows, they should let me know. But I was just telling you, like, anxiety screams and intuition whispers. So we can get super distressed if so much is going on in the outside world, you know. We start feeling confused, we start feeling like we lose ourselves, and I do get this feeling from time to time, certainly, and I think most people do. And then we cannot figure it out, right? Because the anxiety and the stress is screaming so loud in our heads. But when we really make sure that we have even just 5 minutes to meditate or to just sit down and calm down, it's easier to recenter and to find your inner voice again, right? Which is your intuition. And in my personal humble experience, your intuition is the best guidance that you have. In fact, now I believe in God. You could believe in several gods or angels, spirit guides, ancestors. It doesn't matter. But whatever you believe in, I feel that my intuition, my inner voice, is like the direct answer from God. You know, oftentimes you can ask yourself like, hey, I'm praying, when is the answer coming? This to me is the answer, right? The answers are coming from within me. That's my inner voice. Now you can take or leave that belief, it's actually quite personal, but maybe this inspires you, maybe you want to think about it or reflect on it a bit more. So I say, yeah, biggest self-care advice, or what I like to do, is finding my inner voice again. Always help.
Now. Are you single or dating?
Yeah, like I already previously mentioned, I am in a relationship, quite a happy relationship, for the past 4 years almost. So it's been quite some time with a very wonderful Tanzanian man. We are on a distance relationship, unfortunately, long distance relationship. But we're managing quite well, and it has been a beautiful, beautiful and strengthening experience. So yeah, if you're listening to this, my love, my partner, my love is going out to you, of course.
Yay! Okay. Teresa, do you believe in love? Do you believe in soulmates? Because, you know, matching the energy and the vibe, yeah, in other translation of energy, is what some people, and when I say some people, sometimes I mean Lizana, do, you know? So I want to know, do you believe in love? Do you believe in soulmates?
Yeah, so we seem to get to the juicy part of the interview now. No, but I like talking about it. I like talking about love. I like talking about connectedness. And yes, I do believe in love. Like I previously mentioned, I am in a relationship. And what I can say from my experiences now, I do not have many dating experiences, in fact. I'm quite young also, right? But when I look back, I feel like my perception of what love is has changed a lot. Now, I would never settle for less at this point, right? Because I'm experiencing quite a strong bond right now within my relationship. And that is like true love to me. And I think sometimes I hear this from many people that their perception of what real love actually is, it's changing. And love comes also in many different forms. This is not just about romantic love. You can have love for your friends. You can have love for your family. I'm also excited, really excited to one day know what it's like to have the love of a mother, right? When you have your own children, all of these things, yeah, they are love, so I definitely believe in love. It's out there, it's real, and to me it's also the solution to so many things. If you're able to live your life with love and compassion, I think we would be just much kinder to each other, you know. But also love for the self, self-love, self-care, we've previously had it. So yeah, it's definitely connected to all of these topics of like mental health, looking after yourself, knowing where your limits are. And so many people and intelligent quotes say that, you know, you have to love yourself first and all of these things. Maybe sometimes we cannot hear it enough. Like we feel like it's too much and a little bit overstated, right? But it's true. You have to be able to love yourself first. You have to be able to spend time with yourself and enjoy your own company. And then other love relationships will fall into place. So short answer, yes, I do believe in love, of course. Yeah, also this would be a yes for me. I do believe in soulmates. And I mentioned that I have studied cultural anthropology before. For people who maybe do not know, seems to be a little bit off topic, but I'm going to close the loop in a minute. So for people who do not know what that is, cultural anthropology is actually pretty much looking into the day-to-day culture between people, right? So not culture in the sense of like arts and culture or high society culture, any of this, but like literally how are people living day by day and what belief systems are they having. And so from that really rose my interest into also different religious scripts, different mythologies. And when you look into different mythologies, like really truly around the world, this concept of soulmates is peeping through here and there everywhere, right? And mythologies and religious scripts, all of these like very, very, very old writings, that they are coming from a time where the world was not globalized, so people were not able to just give each other a call and be like, hey, I just thought about this concept of soulmates, like, do you think it's true or whatever? Like, no, there was no exchange. But yet you find it in almost every single culture around the world, a similar concept of soulmates, right? So I think there is definitely some truth to it. Any culture, any belief that is holding itself strongly up until this day, since the first day of time, right, is definitely a good foundation in a way, or has proven to be somehow beneficial to us. So and with any belief system that cannot be scientifically proven, I just always like to say, like, yeah, even religious or like the presence of God, if you wish, it's not scientifically proven. I am still a believer. And I think, like, I mean, what is the worst case scenario? We believe in it and we have immense benefits from it. And then in the end, if it's not there, okay, we still had the benefits, right? Even though I do truly believe in higher forces. But yeah, same with soulmates. I believe that they are there. And but I do not only believe in soulmates in like a romantic type of view. Like most people, they believe there's only one soulmate and there's like the one, you know, the one you have to spend your life with, the one you're going to marry. And while I do like these romantic ideas, I really even prefer the idea of having several soulmates, several really, really compatible people in your life that you're meant to find along your life path. Some soulmates are staying only for a season, some really for a lifetime. And I think that these are not only like your partners in life, like your romantic partners, but they could also be your friends, they could be your family, they could be a lifelong business partner, like just people who are meant to find you. And I also like this idea of having a soul family or a soul tribe, you can even say, right? Those are the people you just feel easily connected to. Best example are friends that you have not seen in years maybe, but suddenly you're able to meet up, you have time, you're in the same country again, and it's like no time has passed, the conversation flows naturally. Those are the people you want to look out for and you want to try and keep in your life, I think, because they might just be soul family, right? So again, short answer, yes, I do believe in soulmates, but not only in romantic ones.
Oh, this is so beautiful. It is so beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Now, I know we had a combo on this one, but I'm gonna bring it up in here. Small wedding or big wedding?
Small or big wedding, yeah. You and me, we have been talking about this before. I remember. I remember our conversation. And yeah, I mean, even previously, we came to the conclusion you have to be able to afford the party. I would not want to go broke just to impress some wedding guests, like having a huge wedding of like 2,000 or more people, of which I don't even know most of the people, you know. I've been talking about soul tribe. It is important to me. Once I will celebrate a wedding, my soul tribe, my family, my people, they have to be there, yeah. So the most important people for sure, but I'm definitely not the kind of person who would want to, let's say, invite all of my colleagues just for a sense of duty. If they're not my friends, they're not coming. Like, I'm sorry, but I have to be selective here. And it's not that, like, I like to invite people, right? And yeah, it's not a financial aspect. It's not that I'm like stingy or anything, but I just don't see the value in creating something so big and impressive for a bunch of people that you do not know closely. So I don't like this idea. Of course, I like the idea of looking very beautiful on my special day and wearing a nice dress or whatever. But when I look at the wedding dress prices in my country and at the fact that you are wearing this only for one day, you know, I just don't see the, like, I would prefer to put more money and effort into having a really, really beautiful travel or journey with my partner afterwards. Okay, I would much prefer that. And for me, the biggest aspect is that I only invite people who are important to me and to him, who we truly love and who truly love us, and that we have fun and good food. You know, I'm a food lover as well. So yeah, good food, good music, certainly, right? These aspects are very important to me, yeah. And then I don't care how big or small it is, that's not the focus for me.
Nice. Now, Teresa, please feel free to talk about your projects, your upcoming projects, your art, and we need to support each other in this creative industry. So yes, the flow is yours.
Yeah, so that's almost a wrap. Thank you so much for having me today, Lizana. I really, really enjoyed the interview. And thank you every single one of you who has been listening to this point. I know I've been talking a lot, but shout out again just to the most amazing host ever, Lizana, for choosing such interesting questions that really, really sparked my interest for arts and for the people, really, and the culture and all of these things that I'm truly passionate about. But yeah, since I am able to or allowed to leave some self-advertisement here. I would definitely like to ask you to check out all of my drawings and paintings on Instagram if you are now curious. It is my main platform to share any of my artistic progress, and you will find me at Theresa_arts. You do write my name with a TH in front, so it's Theresa_arts. And I'll be happy to see you there and to hear from you. Also, if you're an artist and you're interested to collaborate in any kind of way, please be sure to pop into my DMs, drop me your ideas. I'm definitely open for collaboration. Also, of course, if you want to purchase a portrait drawing, if you want to request something, also you can just leave me a message anytime. I do have my price list ready for you, no strings attached. You can look through my offers and see if there is anything for you. I do have customers in Tanzania and also other countries, so I'm sure that we can arrange some type of shipping. That has always worked well previously, so I'm sure we can arrange something. If you are interested to listen to further interviews, I do have two interviews on YouTube with like a smaller local museum. They are in German, but they do have English titles. So if you just type in my name, Theresa Hampe, which is my last name, Hampe, and then you could type "All You Need Is Love" behind that. That's one title of the artworks. And then you could type the other one is "Dance Till the Pain Vanishes." You'll find my interviews there. It was a really interesting project as well. You might want to check that out. But that is all for now. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you again, Lizana, for having me here. And I hope to hear from some of you soon. Yeah.
I feel good.
A shout out to the host. Well, did you hear that? Thank you so much, Theresa. You're an amazing, awesome, wonderful person. And thank you for being a part of this episode, Visualizing Art. Yes. And to y'all, wait for the fun fact. And here is the quick fun fact about art. Did you know that Olympics, yes, used to be all about art? It wasn't all about the Arabs, you know, the sports people only. It used to be about art. And that was like between 1912 to 1948, where the founder of the modern games was enamored about the essence of art, you know, drawing sports people in, you know, in sculptures, in paintings, and all of that, even literature. Did you know that? Yeah, so yeah. Thank you so much for all who have been listening to this episode from the start until now. And please don't forget to follow Theresa_arts and reach out and buy her art, because you know what? We need to support the creatives. Yay! And please don't forget to contact us, to reach us through our Instagram account, @ChaiConvoTZ, and we have a new Twitter account, @ChaiConvo. It's so new, it needs you to be there. Until the next episode, this has been Chai Convo, and this has been Lizana Kafwa. Until the next episode, stay cool.